Pure and selfless devotion is followed by absorption in God and ultimate union with Him. Love, lover, and beloved become one. The effects of this supreme love are described by the sage Narada in his aphorisms on Bhakti Yoga. Obtaining which, man becomes perfect, immortal, satisfied. He desires nothing, grieves not, hates none, does not delight in sense objects, becomes intoxicated, rejoices in the bliss of the Atman. The man who experiences this unitary consciousness enters into the kingdom of heaven and becomes perfect, even as the Father in heaven is perfect. Take heed that ye do not your alms before men, to be seen of them. Otherwise, ye have no reward of your Father which is in heaven. Therefore, when thou doest thine alms, do not sound a trumpet before thee, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. But when thou doest alms, let not thy left hand know what thy right hand doeth, that thine alms may be in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret himself shall reward thee openly. Here Jesus speaks of action and its reward, cause and effect, which in Vedanta is set forth as the law of karma. The law of karma states that if I do some good deed for you, I will get my reward. Whether you yourself give me that reward or not does not matter. If I do good, I shall receive good in return. If I do something bad, bad will come back to me. That is the law. St. Paul says in his epistle to the Galatians, "Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap." But in order that we may reach perfection, we must free ourselves from all attachment, from all craving for the fruits of action. We must free the mind from every kind of impression and tendency, the good as well as the bad, for good actions also create karma. If we want to transcend karma, the Gita teaches we must learn to offer the fruits of our work to God. This is karma yoga, the way to union with God through God-dedicated action. In karma yoga, the devotee's whole life becomes an unending ritual, since every action is performed not in hope of one's personal gain or advantage, but as worship. To dedicate the fruits of one's work to God is to work with non-attachment. We must not give way to pride and vanity if the results of our work are successful and win popular praise. On the other hand, having done our best, we must not despair if our work has disappointing results, or is harshly criticized, or disregarded altogether. Many men and women will work to the best of their ability in a dedicated manner. But if their ideal is anything short of union with God, it will be almost impossible for them not to despair if they find their cause defeated and their life work brought to nothing. Only the devotee of God need never despair because he renounces the fruit of action. He has his reward, God himself. To many people, non-attachment suggests indifference, laziness, and fatalism. Actually, non-attachment is the very opposite of indifference. It is a positive virtue born of attachment to God. In fact, the follower of karma yoga must be intensely attached to his work while he is doing it. His whole mind must be concentrated on doing it perfectly, since it is to be offered as worship. But he must be able to detach himself at a moment's notice. Through the practice of non-attachment and selfless service, the devotee frees himself from the wheel of cause and effect, deed and reward, and obtains the infinite. And when thou prayest, thou shalt not be as the hypocrites are, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and in the corners of the streets, that they may be seen of men. Verily, I say unto you, they have their reward. But thou, when thou prayest, enter into thy closet, and when thou hast shut thy door, pray to thy Father which is in secret. And thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly. Here Christ begins his instructions on prayer. He tells us that if we want anything less than God, we can have it. If we want a reputation for holiness, we can go out into some public place and pray where everybody can see us, and we can get our reward, no doubt about it. Public prayer receives public rewards, recognition, wealth, followers, and power. But true religion is not a matter for display. It is something very sacred, and therefore secret. This is why Christ warns us not to make a show of worship. Genuine purity and spirituality need no advertising. If you pray to God for his own sake, not to make him the means to some other end, but wanting him alone, then never mind the world. Never mind whether it blames or admires you. Go apart into a secret place and ask for him. You can be certain that he will give himself to you. He will reward you with his own presence. But when ye pray, use not vain repetitions as the heathen do, for they think that they shall be heard for their much speaking. Be not ye therefore like unto them, for your Father knoweth what things ye have need of before ye ask him. God is not deceived. He knows our needs and our innermost thoughts. He is the hearer behind the ear, the thinker behind the mind, the speaker behind the tongue. He is that pure consciousness whose reflection upon our intellect makes us conscious. He knows whether our prayers are hypocritical, vain repetitions, or the supplications of a sincere heart. Sri Ramakrishna used to say, "When mind and speech unite in earnest prayer, that prayer is answered. Of no avail are the prayers of the man who says with his lips, 'These are all thine, O Lord,' and at the same time thinks in his heart that all of them are his. Don't be a traitor to your thoughts. Pray with a sincere and simple heart, and your prayers will be heard." Chapter 5. The Lord's Prayer. Matthew 6, 9 through 13. After this manner, therefore, pray ye. Having instructed us how to pray, Christ now gives us an actual prayer which we may use, the Lord's Prayer. It is perhaps the best known prayer in the world, and many people repeat it every day of their lives. Like all great statements, this prayer is both simple and profound, and if we take it literally, we can miss its deeper significance. Its meaning is revealed to those who practice spiritual disciplines, for it gives in brief form the fundamental principles upon which a holy life must be based. Each phrase of the prayer serves as a reminder of the ideal and the methods already presented. Two basic types of prayer are used by different individuals: man-centered and God-centered prayer. People whose prayer is man-centered beseech God to enrich their life on earth, to remove their sufferings, to provide them with wealth, success, and comfort. God-centered prayer, on the other hand, is motivated by spiritual discrimination and devotion. People whose prayers are God-centered seek Him alone, knowing that God-realization is the whole purpose of life. The Lord's Prayer is God-centered, and in it, Jesus teaches us how to become absorbed in the consciousness of God and find eternal joy and freedom. Anyone who sincerely seeks God can approach Him with the Lord's Prayer. He does not have to subscribe to any religious creed or dogma. If he accepts the idea that God exists and can be realized, and he follows Christ's teachings, he will reach perfection. The prayer begins, "Our Father." Christ is teaching us how to think of God when we pray to Him. For most of us, God, as an impersonal being, is too abstract to meditate upon. He is an idea, it seems, while we feel that we are flesh and blood, with emotions and desires. Therefore, as we saw in the previous chapter, Christ, like other great spiritual teachers, emphasized the path of devotion in which God is worshipped as a personal being. In order that we may love the Lord with all our heart, soul, and mind, as Christ wants us to do, we have to consider Him our very own. And in order that we may consider Him our very own, we have to enter into a definite relationship with Him. The different expressions of love which exist on the human plane also exist on the divine plane. The Hindu prayer says, "Thou art our loving mother. Thou art our compassionate father. Thou art our true friend and constant companion. Thou art our only treasure and our only wisdom. Thou art all in all." We must begin with a specific relationship with God. Later, we come to the understanding that He is all in all. According to the Hindu teachers of Bhakti Yoga, there are 5 chief relationships with God. First, the relationship between creature and creator. Second, between servant and master, or child and parent. Third, friend and friend. Fourth, parent and child. And fifth, the relationship between wife and husband, or lover, seen as feminine, and beloved. The 5 relationships with God are not confined to Hindu worship, for Christians also have long been familiar with them. Hindu devotees adore the baby Krishna. Christians adore the Christ child. Brother Lawrence looked on himself primarily as a servant of the Lord. Catholic nuns consider